Oh, welcome along to the Rugby Pass podcast. This is the short ball with Mills Mulyaina and Scotty Stevenson. We're talking about the Mitre 10 Cup finals this weekend. Millsy, Auckland taking on Canterbury and Otago taking on Waikato. That is the Premiership and the Championship, respectively. And there might be a small test in Japan.
Is there?
We can discuss. I don't know if there is. We'll figure it out as this podcast goes along. But Millsy, a man close to your heart is on the line to start us off on the short ball today. Man who pretty much made your dreams come true, gave you all those caps, kept picking you on the side.
He did. I tell you what, when you mentioned he was going to be on the show, I got quietly excited. I haven't been this excited for a very long time.
I also noticed that there's small beads of sweat forming on your forehead, but he's not interrogating
you. No, that's because I had to walk from St. Luke's here, mate.
Well, it's the one and only Sir Graham Henry on the line. Good morning to you, Sir Ted.
Good morning.
Now,
thank you for inviting me.
Well, no, it's a pleasure because I don't know what it is about you, Ted. You're a man of successes, and here you go, rumbling back into provincial coaching life, and Auckland straight into a final. Are you prepared to take all the credit so far this season?
No, I've been in the background, very much in the background. Alama Premier and his men have done a fabulous job. I can't praise them enough, really. Philo and and Alama have done a fabulous job with the Auckland team. I'm a man of the past, just trying to help a wee bit in the background.
Yeah, I don't believe that for a second, because I've spoken to a couple of players that said you have been dropping pearls of wisdom all over the show. But Ted, I want to be serious. What have you noticed about what Alama and Philo and Ty have brought to this Auckland side?
They've organised an environment which the guys enjoy. There's a lot of sociality within the environment. I don't mean outside of rugby that much, but in the rugby environment, they do have a lot of. They've got four teams. They compete against each competition, but it's a lot of enjoyment, and the boys have enjoyed it. They've grown in confidence, both as people and as footballers. Feel comfortable in the environment and want to play. So I think they've done a fabulous job. I haven't seen anybody do that better. And I've been involved in the game for a wee while. I take my hat off to them. They've done a fabulous job.
Shucks, Ted. That's a hell of a compliment there, the fact that you haven't seen anyone do it better. You speak about enjoyment, but also the few players that were spoken to, especially the young guys, and last week we spoke to Dalton Papali'i, but it seems you're enjoying it as well, because a lot of them, you know, they say you're coming into the environment, and I remember meeting you for the first time. Gee, you can be a scary man, but to a lot of them, they say that you enjoy it. You know, I've spoken to Lee Sati, he says, you know, every now and then you crack a few jokes here and there. So it seems you're enjoying the environment. I just want to ask, like, how has the players sort of changed? You've seen players change, evolve over the years, but in terms of the off-field stuff and, you spoke about enjoyment, how have they sort of changed over the years that you've been around?
Oh, they're much more relaxed. I find it quite incredible they're so relaxed. When it's time, they turn it on, and I guess that's by being in the professional environment, most of them, not all of them, some of them are club players, but most of them being in the professional environment 12 months of the year, you know, they know when to turn off and when to turn on. Mm-hmm. And, I think this generation, and I haven't coached for quite a while now, is quite a bit more relaxed than your generation, Melzi.
Right.
You guys were pretty relaxed. So, you know, it's just... And I think it's good, you know. I think they're enjoying, as I say, they're enjoying that environment. And they've added to it, you know. TJ Fiani has been the captain. He wasn't the captain originally. Patrick Tuipulotu and Blake Gibson were the two captains. And Blake's injured, which is a real pity, otherwise he'd be on the All Black tour. Mm. And Patrick's only played 50 minutes for us. Mm. So TJ and his leadership group with Alama and the other coaches have really brought this team together and have produced a very fun, full environment where the guys really enjoy it and want to play footy.
So Ted, tell me this then. How have you adapted to that? Because I suspect, you know, it would be something that's quite challenging to be able to see guys so damn relaxed. I'd imagine you'd be, you know, loosening your tie every now and then because, man, it must be. I mean, even hearing that, I'm thinking far out. If you know, back in those days, it wasn't too far ago, long ago. I mean, you know, to have someone that sort of wasn't switched on, you think, well, he's not on the job. How have you sort of adapted to actually realizing, you know, some of these guys can actually, you know, switch on and switch off? Because it must be a hard thing to do.
Yeah, well, I've realized, Millsy, that I'm not the only one in step. You know, so I realise it's probably something that's you're gonna have to go along with, run along with, mate, and enjoy the ride.
Yeah,
and, you know, I coached in the 1970s. Hell, you know, I can't remember how long ago that is, but that's a wee while ago. And you know, and you look at that's 5 decades. Is it 5 decades? Yeah. Maybe 6 decades. I'm not sure. My maths is not that good. But, you know, it's been amazing change.
Mm-hmm.
And coaches need to change with the young people that they coach.
Mm, nice.
And I had to make a lot of changes from the amateurs to professional. Like, I was a much different coach when I coached the All Blacks than what I was when I coached Auckland or coached secondary school rugby or club rugby prior to that, you know. So you have to change with the time and change with the personnel, because they're a different group of young men than they were 10 years ago, and that's a reflection on how they've been brought up and the education they've had, and that's them. That's the young man of today, and you've just got to adapt. You can't coach like you used to coach, otherwise you wouldn't last.
Auckland's into the final, Ted, a team that you are synonymous with, and up against Canterbury, which has become the powerhouse province in our domestic game here in New Zealand. I can't think of a better final in terms of the history between these two teams. It must be an incredibly exciting place to be at the moment, Auckland Rugby, knowing that they are hosting a final for the first time in a very long time against their arch rival.
Oh, yeah, no, it's fabulous, isn't it? Like, it's a dream come true, really, for this group of people. You know, our basic purpose for the year was to gain respect.
Mm.
Well, respect of ourselves, really, initially, and then respect of the Auckland rugby public and New Zealand rugby public. So it's we're on the track. We're on the road to doing that. And to be playing the champions is fabulous, because it's a fabulous measuring stick. You know, you've got to take your hat off to Canterbury. Now, they won 10 out of the last 11, which is ridiculous.
Mm.
But they want to be the best. And I can respect that and relate to that. And they make no excuses for wanting to be the best, and they do everything they can to be the best.
Mm.
Not only as a team, but the structure of Canterbury and Crusaders rugby enables them to make great progress. So I've got great respect for what Canterbury and Crusaders have done, and it's marvellous to be able to play in the final against them.
What about from an Auckland rugby point of view? Because people have always looked at Auckland, Ted, and you've been involved in Auckland rugby for a long time, 5 decades, as you've just pointed out. People talk about the amount of talent that is created in this region, and then ponder why that hasn't been able to be transferred into performance over the last decade or so of Auckland rugby. So what have changed specifically and what has been imparted on these kids in training and in games this season as opposed to over the last 4 or 5?
Well, Scotty, I don't know what's happened in the last 4 or 5 because I haven't been there. But you know, I can only repeat what I've just said. You know, I think the boys feel very comfortable in the environment. They all feel they can express themselves, and there's a lot of quiet guys there, as you can appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But they're coming out of their shell and expressing themselves and adding to what we're doing. And so they've grown as people as well as rugby players. So it's about setting the right culture, when this culture is about standards, simple standards, and guys enjoying that environment and feeling respected, feeling wanted, and I think that's gone a long way to, like, there's a lot of guys playing in the Auckland team right now who have got super contracts, but don't play a lot of Super Rugby.
Yeah.
And TJ Fayani, the captain, is a very good example of that. Like, he has played outstanding rugby for us.
Mm.
He's led well. He's respected by the troops. He's loving getting an opportunity. Like, how many Super Rugby games has he played since he's been contracted? You could probably count them on two hands. Mm. So he's getting an opportunity, and he's taking that opportunity. And there's a lot of other guys in a similar situation to him, where they're getting opportunities to show they've got ability to play this game.
Ted, I mean, you speak about respect and guys getting opportunities, and that, I mean, it's all right, you know, when you see stuff like that. And, you know, so often guys, you know, go out and try and play for Super Rugby sort of starting positions and things like that in provincial roles. I mean, TJ is a perfect example. He seems to have gelled the whole team together this whole year, and the way he's been playing has been exceptional. My question really is probably, you know, about the game this weekend. I've loved the way your forward pack has actually adapted. You know, especially a few times have gone backwards, but they've come out and sort of fixed things, which has led to you guys just really sort of shifting to another gear. I mean, where has that come from? Obviously, if you talk about the culture, but from a technical point of view, I mean, what sort of confidence has that given the guys throughout this whole season to be able to adapt like that?
Yeah, well, I think Thilo's highly respected for the job he's doing. You know, he's got presence, Thilo Tiatia, and I guess you know him pretty well, you guys. So he's got presence and respect, and they want to play for him. He's also got some players in that pack who have been around a wee bit, you know. They're leading the way. It's not all 21-year-olds in that pack. So, but the guy who played outstanding last week was Akira Ione, you know. And he scored a couple of tries that nobody else could score, I think. He reminded me of Jonah Lomu in his heyday. You know, Jonah used to score tries which were impossible.
Yeah.
And Aki did the same thing last week. And it's a pity he's not in the All Blacks, because I think if they showed him a bit of love, he could be a massive player at international level. I know he's got some, you know, there's areas of his game that needs to be fixed up, but hell, what a talent. Then you've got other guys in that pack, Evan Elmstead, the Canadian boy.
Yeah.
You know, he never plays a bad game.
Mm.
And so you've got a lot of examples of those older fellas standing up and be counted. Robbie Abel.
Yeah.
Robbie Abel, you know, he's played some Super Rugby for the Brumbies. Sam Prattley, you know, he's been around a wee while. Tinga Lamalu, the other lock, you know, he's played for Samoa. So you've got a group of solid citizens there who are working together and producing a platform. And then we had Nolton Papali'i. Well, hell, he's a hell of a good player. And now in the All Blacks. But, you know, which is fabulous. He made 32 tackles in one game.
Yeah, no, he's a freak show, Ted. Absolute freak.
And a fabulous young man along with it, you know. So I think Alama has selected a side with a balance of some older heads and some young talent. Most of the backs are young. Tamua Manu, playing at centre, has played exceptionally well. He's another example of a guy who didn't get many opportunities at super level and mainly played on the wing. Well, he's a natural 13, you know. And he's played well for us. Harry Plummer. How he's come on. So Jonathan Ruru, I could go on and on.
You've just named the team, Ted. You've named the team.
Yeah. Well, it's been difficult for me. So you know, you've got a lot of guys who have stood up.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think there's a wee bit of a disappointment. There's only four Auckland guys in the All Blacks. And you know, we're playing a team tomorrow or Saturday. They've got five guys who are playing against Japan for the All Blacks, and I think there's another 10 or so who are in the main All Black team. Mm. So, you know, maybe there needs to be a bit of love now that we need to look at some of these Auckland players. And if you get success, it'll breed success. It's like the Canterbury boys getting, I don't know what the number is, but a large number in the All Blacks. Well, success breeds success, and, and people want to play for that team because they could become All Blacks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I won't go on about that.
No, but I understand the point. But if this is the start of what could be a whole new era of success for Auckland, then that will naturally flow on. Ted, I want to take you back because today's a special day. I don't know if you know this, but 7 years ago, you blokes won a Rugby World Cup.
On this day, Ted.
Shit. You were sitting there in the coach's box, slapping the desk when Tony Woodcock dunked the tea bag, and and then you sat there planning an alternate life in the south of France with Ray if you did not win that game, and then you watched your old mate Beaver kick that goal. Never in doubt.
We smashed the mate 7. I think
that's right. It was an absolute hiding.
Yeah, so if it hadn't been 8-7, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now.
No,
if it was 7-8.
I would have still talked to you.
You wouldn't have wanted to talk to me.
No, I'd always want to talk to you. That wasn't the making of you, Ted. You were a good man before that. But a very special memory, mate, and a very special night. And I'm guessing it's never left you, that feeling.
I know it changed a lot of things. You know, after the 2007 debacle, and let's not go down there, winning that Rugby World Cup. And I think that's been a hell of a big foundation for the confidence and the continual improvement of the All Blacks, you know, just getting that monkey off the back. And so the first time in 24 years, obviously, and now Steve Hansen and Richie and the team doing it again in 2011, more convincingly, I must say. But the sides just kept on growing, which is, you know, sitting on the sidelines and being there before, knowing what it's like, is a huge privilege. Just to see the continual drive for self and team improvement. And the All Blacks have been quite phenomenal, I think.
So, Ted, where now for you? I know you've looked ahead, mate. Are you coming back to Auckland next year? I know you're going overseas to watch a couple of test matches, but I'm talking, and how do you keep these players? You've spoken about all these players' success. Are you going to be influential in making sure that the growth of Auckland rugby continues?
Well, I think my coaching days, look, it's very difficult because I'm going to be at the World Cup, Ray and I are going for the entire 7 weeks, I think. With various things that we've got involved in.
Nice, Ted.
You know, good. A little holiday won't be bad with my wonderful wife. But that cuts out half the NPC, you know, half the Mitre 10 Cup. But, you know, I would like to be involved if I can be of some help, because I think we can do other things in Auckland rugby apart from Alama and the team that's going to enhance the game in this province.
Yeah.
And the greater Blues area, in fact. You know, by having better competitions at secondary school level and better competitions at club level, coaching of coaches, all sorts of things that can enhance the game outside the team itself, you know.
You'll be there, Ted. You're not going anywhere. You can take your holiday in Japan. You can take your tour group, which I know will be a wonderful experience for all of those you're hosting with Raywin, but you'll be back. We know you will.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Scotty, you know, you've always known everything, so that's very good. I wondered what I was going to be doing.
What's been funny today is sitting here next to Millsy. It's probably the first time he's ever asked you a question, Ted.
I don't think it was that bad. How like I'm responsible for Millsy. I got him from the deep south.
You did.
They roll their R's to Kelson Boys High School. Then I left because I was coaching. And then I don't know how many tests you're involved with me, Millsy, but I was involved in the 101 for the All Blacks.
Well,
I think it was 101.
Yeah, well, you owed me a lot, mate. You told me to stay in Auckland rugby, then you left and went and coached Wales 2 months later. So I figured hopefully one day you'd come back and give me a few test matches or at least Auckland caps.
Well, it was always in the back of my mind, Millsy.
Good on you.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always say, well, how can I help this marvellous young man?
And that's what I love about you, Ted. You're a very trustworthy and loyal man.
So how many test matches did you play when I was coaching? You don't know. You don't know, you see.
I couldn't tell you. But yeah, there was a lot of lawn mowing involved in that too.
I would say probably 85.
I think you're right. You're not wrong there. I think maybe about it was over 80. Yeah.
Well, the only number that counts, Ted, is you got them to 100.
I put up with you for a long time.
And we've put up with you long enough on the podcast today. Graham Henry, best of luck to your Auckland team this weekend, mate. And been a real pleasure talking to you today on the short ball.
Enjoyable.
Thanks, Ted.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, Ted.
See you, boys. See you later. All the best.
Sir Graham Henry joining us. He's still got it, the old boy. He's still got it.
He has, hey. Gee, I mean, that when he said that the players have changed, I just can't. I mean, it's nice to hear that. The fact that guys can switch on and switch off. Because I know for a fact that if someone did it at my era, we'd be having a leadership group meeting and there'll be a high chance they'll be gone. Yeah, and also, remember when the Twitter thing came out?
Yeah.
We had that meeting. No one knew what Twitter was. Ted gets up and talks about some guys Twittering and said there's two twits in this room, Corey Jane and Israel. No one actually knew. I mean, how big of a change is that? I mean, to actually, as someone that's Ted's age, thinking, well, he's got to adapt to that.
Mate, if he couldn't get his head around Twitter, imagine him trying to get his head around Tinder. I mean, something else entirely. I imagine old Ted sitting there. What are you doing? Swiping right? What? Now, I think the thing about Sir Graham and we know him pretty well, Millsy.
Yeah.
I think he's relaxed because he's not the head coach.
Yes.
And so he's there to impart upon this team his own brand of wisdom and to offer assistance where necessary. And I think that's a role that suits where Ted is in life. Mm. I mean, he's done the hard yards as a head coach. He's lived the stresses, the tensions, the pressures. He understands that being in that space and the criticism publicly that comes with being a head coach, he's been there, done that.
Yeah.
But I think he's very genuine in what he wants to achieve with this Auckland team. And I think, in a sense, for Ted, it keeps him young.
Yeah,
it's really good for him to be around the next generation of players.
Yeah.
Who are different again from your generation, who were the last generation he coached, and to sit there and see how the game has changed. The game of rugby itself doesn't change fundamentally.
No.
But the protagonists change.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the social pressures around the game change, and the money changes, and the transfer of talent changes. So, you know, I am sure, and we'll talk to Alama and Philo at some stage on the short ball as well about their experiences first year in Auckland, but... You know, to have someone with his passion for the game locally and his passion for the players.
Yeah.
And I think that shines through with Ted. He is very passionate about these kids.
That's the thing. You know,
immediately he's on the All Black bandwagon about half his players,
time,
right?
Big time, eh? Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing you always love about Ted. He is passionate. I love the way he's gone about, I suppose, transitioning out of a head coach. You know, perhaps he took a wee while to find his feet. You remember he went to Argentina, did a little bit of stuff there. He went to the Warriors and advised them on a few things. You know, was in and out of the Blues. But I think he has. He's got. You're right, Sumo. He's fairly relaxed because he's been there, done that. But also, he hasn't come back and said, well, you know, this is how it should be done. He's actually gone in and advised and sort of found his way and found his actual role. Mm. You know, a hell of a talented man in terms of knowledge that he's got for the game. And now he's bringing it through with these young guys. But I just love the way that Ted's actually stood back and sort of said, well, you know, here's my sort of advice. He's enjoying the environment in the Auckland, which is evident. You know, the guys love him being around, but they also love... It'll be the little things that he'll say and do that guys will really appreciate. And it's certainly, as I said, I think, you know, guys are really enjoying his presence.
Was he like that as a head coach with the All Blacks? Because we've seen him on dressing room cams and he's just quite happy hovering around the outside, around the periphery.
He's obviously
just picking up little bits and bobs here and there and who he might need to say a quiet word to. Was he kind of like that as a head coach as well? He would just sort of hover around, or was he much more
He was right in there, and it was almost like he couldn't wait to get down from upstairs to actually say something. But, you know, he composed himself to be able to actually speak about what was needed. You know, back then we'd split off, and then, you know, the two assistant coaches would have their say, you know, Steve and Wayne, and then would come together, and he'll say his bit. But the biggest thing about Ted is, you know, his willingness to adapt. There was a time there, you know, where I would come in and, you know, he was very old school. You know, this is how it was. We would be in a semicircle from numbers 1 to 22. He would basically go around the whole team and, and tell you what you needed to do in this meeting at 6 o'clock before every game. Now, guys, you know, you talk about change, the change of players, but guys were starting to fall asleep, you know. And but we went to him as a leadership, thinking, shit, how are we going to actually tell, you know, Ted that, you know, perhaps should just cut his meetings? Because, you know, your guys will listen for the first couple of minutes, but you just sort of wander off to somewhere else. And he took that on board. He took a lot of things on board and was able to say, well, yeah, there are a few times where he disagreed, but he took it all on board and thought, okay, you know, if that's what the guys are saying, then, you know, I'll listen. But certainly as a coach, a head coach, he was very direct. And that's why I'm so surprised, you know, at the way he is now. But again, adaptability, the fact that he's so relaxed that guys being relaxed.
Yeah.
Like, far out. That's huge.
Yep. Well, that's right. And I mean, you know, the pressure's off, isn't it? The pressure won't be off this weekend. Auckland have decided to give away the game, so to speak.
Is it?
So free entry to Eden Park for a provincial final. Okay. There's two ways to look at this, and let's discuss it on the short ball today. One, what a great gesture. 4 o'clock kickoff. You come along, bring your family. It's all free entry. You can sit and watch a great game of footy. A classic, really. Auckland-Canterbury is a classic matchup. It's probably the biggest provincial matchup we've ever had. It's the real deal, this. Mm. And that's great, and I love the gesture. Secondly, and maybe conversely, if you can't sell tickets to an Auckland-Canterbury provincial rugby final in the Premiership, winner-take-all, champion of the nation, what can you sell tickets to?
And that's the thing. And the other thing is, there's nothing else on.
No.
Is there? There isn't.
There's a test that night in Japan. But this is the quandary, and I'm sure that Auckland's commercial team have been through it, and Jared Beer, their CEO, has been through it, and Eden Park, who have supported this move from Auckland Rugby, have been through it. There is a value proposition here. What other professional competition in the world of sport says to its fans when it gets to the denouement, when it gets to the great climactic moment, the final, says, gates open, come on down.
Yeah.
And what concerns me as a fan of the game, especially provincially, and I'm a massive provincial rugby fan, as anyone who's read my writing or listened to this pod will know, I kind of, a little part of me aches a little, not because Auckland Rugby have decided to make this gesture, and again, I applaud it, but a little part of me aches that this is obviously, we can do this because what do we stand to make anyway?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And you're right. I think it should be applauded. This is, I mean, far out. You've got a provincial final and it's free. But I think if you look at it, the bigger picture, you know, you've heard Ted say they want to earn respect back from as a team, but more importantly, as a rugby community. And perhaps this is huge. This is a huge gesture in saying, well, you know, we want our fans back. You know, and if you can't pay to come, or you don't wish to pay, even though you can afford to come, well, we're going to offer it to you for free in the hope, and I suspect this is what their thinking is, in the hope that next year you're going to say, well, I'll remember that, and I'm going to go along, and I'm going to support this team that offered me this, this free entry. And it's I think it's the kids. It's more about the kids, because in their minds, you know, for the years to come, they'll remember that they got to go to Eden Park to watch a provincial final for free. But you're right. I think that is the bigger picture. It does in some way. You think, well, far out. You know, this is
Napster didn't make anyone go out and buy CDs. That's all I'm saying.
No.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I just hope, and I was talking on New Zealand radio here the other day, I just said, I hope people support this.
Yeah.
Because it's a massive move from Auckland Rugby to do this, to give away the first final they've hosted in, what, 10 11, years?
11 years, years or so, yeah.
To say to people, you're invited, come on down. I mean, if people snub that invitation, I think that's a real shame and a real blow to a team, and Ted's been through a lot of those players. Yeah. They deserve respect this year for how they've played the game.
And I think, you know, so often, and it's always the case, you know, when the team's losing, everyone's on about the team. When the team's winning, it's all about the team. Well, here's a gesture from obviously a organisation that's matured and thought, well, okay, although we don't like it, there's a
probably a good chance that we're not going to make much at all. So why don't we just, you know, bite the bullet and say, well, you know, we're not going to make much anyway, and let's try and get everyone here as, you know, in there for free and as much people as we can. That's probably, and so they've matured, and you've got to applaud the organisation.
Yeah, I do, mate. I think we've got to have a discussion around both sides of this coin. Yeah, and also the way this competition is structured means that it costs teams money to host these finals. It's a ludicrous system, but I mean, let's not go down that rabbit hole today on the short ball because the way this
That's
national,
a massive hole.
It's a big hole, and there's no Cheshire Cat at the bottom. I can assure you, you don't go down that rabbit hole and find the Wizard of Anything or whatever it was. He was on drugs, eh? Guy who wrote Alice in Wonderland. Massively.
He was.
Yeah. Tina knows. Is your mic working, Tina?
Yeah.
What drugs was he on? Hi. Was it C.S. Lewis?
I don't know. Some hallucinant.
He was on hallucinogenics.
Yeah. All of those kinds.
Absinthe and wormwood and...
So... Yeah.
Well, you don't look at a permanently smiling, floating cat. You don't make that up unless you are on something.
Yeah, true that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying Auckland rugby's on drugs. So I wasn't trying to conflate these two things. But
so you don't need to be straight to be successful.
I know. More drugs you take, the better.
Shit.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Get on the tramadol highway, my friend.
Oh, the tramadol.
The trammies. Yeah. Eh? Join the opioid crisis. Okay. We need to talk about Canterbury. We need to talk about this final. Canterbury went just full on win at all costs mode against the Muckle. They refused to lose, Canterbury. They should not have won that game.
Nah.
Tasman had that first half, should have been up by 25 points. I don't know how Canterbury do it. I'll tell you what Canterbury do. It was a period of play in the first half. Tasman were hot on attack. Canterbury allowed them 50 metres on phase play. Allowed them 50 metres. Did not attack a single ruck.
Yeah.
Just made their tackles, backed up, got in a line, made the next tackle, backed up, got in a line. I reckon they went 12 phases. Canterbury turned the ball over on the 12th.
Yeah.
The patience this team has to trick you into thinking that you're getting on top of them, only to turn the tables on you, it is extraordinary. And they do it week after week, and they've done it season after season, and they're going to try and do it again against Auckland this weekend. You watch them go at breakdown time. They'll say to Auckland, you score your tries between one and three phases. You see how you go when you've got to put 15 together against us. That's what they'll do.
Yeah, they will. And you've also got to have trust and accuracy because, you know, if you don't go to the rucks, you've still got to get out and make tackles and make sure that, you know, that 50-odd metres all of a sudden comes to a stop because that 51 could be the try line.
Mm.
But, you know, this is where I love the game because Auckland will look at that too and they'll go, well, if we can't score... Well, we can't make big breaks within the first three. What are we going to do? We're going to kick, things like that. But the way the Cantabs just have got that sort of resistance and like they, I mean, I just seen a different team in that second half, that Tasman side. I just thought, well, yeah, end of the game, Tasman will run away with this. But the trust and belief that they showed, and then all of a sudden the set piece started like dominating, which was kind of like, wow.
What did they take Crocky off the game for?
I wondered that.
Crocky was eating him.
Yeah.
Eating him.
And that was I'm not saying, I mean, their set piece was the catalyst of them sort of going backwards. I mean, Christie was under pressure. They couldn't get their game going. I just, there's something, we've always talked about Canterbury.
Yeah, but you know what it is, Melzi? And it's not just these guys will hold you down a second longer. They'll hold you in a second longer. They will hold you back a second longer. They will do everything so far to the line better than any other team in the competition. Mm-hmm. And they really do. And I don't even say that disparagingly. I mean, I'm just applauding it. These guys know how to get away with every single trick in the book.
Yeah.
They truly do.
They do.
But you've got to be able to overcome that.
Yeah.
And only a really good team can overcome that because they will niggle and they will niggle and niggle.
And you know, when Ted spoke about Akira Ioane, you know, if you get under his skin, that's
you know they're going to go after him.
Will.
Luke Whitelock's going to go after him. Luke Romano is going to go after him. They are all going to be chipping away.
So
at him.
I'm looking 100%. Forward to how much composure he shows.
I understand what Ted's saying about Aki because he's a force of nature.
Yeah,
that kid. Right? Yeah. We've watched him play this year. Out of the back of the scrum, there's no one better in the competition. No. There's not. And in terms of work rate, carries, meters, there's no one more formidable in the competition. I think this is the most important game of his career. And I say that because it's all on the line here for Akira Iwani.
Yeah.
He has the chance to win his team a title.
Yeah.
He has never had that opportunity before. He's never had it with the Blues. He's never had it with Auckland. He's had a chance before with Auckland to win the Ranfurly Shield in Hawke's Bay, and I think it was probably his worst game of that particular season. This is the opportunity. This is when you stand up and say, yeah, I've had a great year so far, 11 appearances and 6,000 metres, but this is 80 minutes where I have to be the most dominant player on the park. This is a career-defining game for Akira Iwani.
Yeah, and I think the key thing you mentioned there is the fact that he's got to put all that good stuff to the side. And because he's probably getting a lot of pats on the back. He had a pat on the back now from his one of his coaches. He's got to put that all aside and say, well, nah, you know, I don't care about what's happened in the past. This game here will define me, and I'll go out there and stamp what he has. Well, really hit home to everyone else out there how good I really am.
At 100%, right?
Yeah.
This is your 80 minutes to shine.
Yeah.
Because if they don't win the final, nothing Akira's done this year is going to matter.
I mean, that's the thing, yeah.
Because he hasn't made the All Blacks, and I'm sure he's really gutted about that, and I'm sure there's a lot of people surprised about that, but he's still got a chance to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And in order to make the first tick in the box, it's like, what have you done lately? Oh, I put a team on my shoulders and I carried them to a title against the defending champions. Not bad.
And he can do that. I honestly believe that, you know, I've seen enough growth now over this season, you know, to say, well, yeah, I know there's a lot of things, or little things, these flaws in his game, but I think there's a lot of growth, and perhaps that's the environment. He needs a bit of loving, like Ted said.
Can I stir the pot a little here?
What?
All right. So he's got to work on a few things in his game, right? Okay. And so the All Blacks say, work on a few things in your game, we're not going to pick you. But by the same token, they say it's the best environment in the world to get people in the right in the right position to be playing Test match rugby. So which is it?
Yeah.
You know, put him in your environment and make him the best player in the world, or are you going to ask someone else to do that and say, oh, we can't pick him until he's better? But I thought that's what you guys did.
Yeah, I thought
that's what the All Blacks did. They got players with massive potential and then made them test match footballers.
Well,
isn't that what the greatest coaches in the world do?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then what's the problem with Akira Iwani?
That's it. And maybe it isn't the greatest.
I'm just asking.
Or maybe this Auckland environment perhaps better suits Akira. But yeah, it's a good argument. Good argument, Scotty.
I see column inch after column inch devoted into how wonderful the All Black coaches are. I saw a column on Sunday saying basically that Steve Hansen should be coach for life.
For life?
Well, forever. You know, one or the other. But so, I mean, if you've got a guy like Akira Iwani, what's wrong with your environment that you can't make him better? That you can't iron out the problems?
Yeah, I wouldn't want knowing what those...
What are the problems?
Yeah, true.
It's a hypothetical question.
No, it's a bloody good question.
I didn't mean to touch my breast then when I said that.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. Oh, I think...
Sexy time.
Well, how does a player like this, like Akira, just place so well? Yeah, I know they're winning, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, how they'd go when, you know, things aren't going so well, which has happened in the Blues, but he's still shone as well. They've had him in the All Black environment for a couple of years.
Yeah, so what's happened is what I mean to say. What's happened to convince them that they can't
take him?
Yeah. Mm. There's just a big gap in the understanding here.
Yeah, true.
Because by the same notion, Richie Mwanga's time will come. He's got a few things to work on in his game. He's in your environment. So you're working on those things with him. Kira Iwani's got some things to work on in his game. You don't pick him.
Yeah.
It's the same story, but there's just gaps in the detail.
Depends,
anyway,
right?
We're on a tangent here on the short ball today. We need to get back to Otago taking on Waikato.
Ah.
Otago last week, Melzi. I mean, the game was crazy. It was Britney Spears level crazy at Forsyth Bar, as these things usually turn out to be. Last minute kick for Josh Iwani, win the game. Brad Weber sitting there talking to himself, basically can't understand how they blew it. Otago, only 3 weeks ago, took the shield off Waikato at FMG Stadium. Now they're back. Sevier Reese wasn't playing that game. Waikato are convinced they probably played their worst game of the season against Otago in that shield game. And Fletcher Smith, the former Otago 10 who's been on fire for Waikato, said, can't wait to have him back so we can show them what we've really got. So he's been churning it up quite nicely.
Those tens, eh? Love
tens,
it.
Oh, they love to chat. What do you think here? Because Waikato would surely go into this as favourites, despite that Shield loss, wouldn't they?
Oh, I definitely agree that Waikato didn't play their best game in the Shield. They got themselves back into it. And last week against Northland too, they were down. And,
don't
and so
about that. I don't want to know about
but that. I honestly think Waikato should be able to do this. I've been really impressed with Otago because 4 or 5 weeks ago, I just thought, man, it might have been just after the Canterbury game. You know, they were just starting to string things together, but they were making basic errors. And guys that were making them were super, super rugby experienced. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking to myself, well, what's going on down here? All of a sudden, these same players, and we're talking about the Fattises and the Collins of the world, the Canterbury game where he should have drawn and passed and they would have been gone. He tried to do it all himself when they broke the cross kick. Collins is way out of position looking into the ruck. I just couldn't get over that because it's a core fundamental skill as for a fullback. But these guys, all of a sudden, the guys I'm speaking about have just stood up. They've been huge. And they've really led from the front right from when they bet Waikato and pushed on. Actually, it was probably before that. It was probably the Auckland game.
That was the big turner for them.
Yeah.
Beating Auckland on Eden Park.
And so,
it's a freak show.
It's just that, I mean, yeah, it's just, for me, it's hard to, home advantage is huge.
Milsy, producer Tina's leaving the podcast.
Oh my gosh, I'm really busting.
Who needs to go to the bathroom halfway through a podcast? All right, just come back when you're ready, producer Tina. We'll just carry on talking here. Far out.
Yeah.
Man.
So, no, they've got a chance. Waikato have got a lot to play for, though, you know? They're hurting. I'm not going to get the Shield back, though.
Tina's bladder was hurting there. She's actually crawled under the camera and out the door. I've never seen anything like that on the short ball. The thing for me for Waikato is their line out drive is going to be formidable. It has been all year. Yeah. Samisoni Takayahu scored, 11 tries this season from line out drives, pretty much. That's one area of the game where Otago just have to shore themselves up. They've just got to get parity and try and avoid the kick. Their scrum's pretty good.
Yes.
And their breakdown work's pretty good, although Hawke's Bay flooded the breakdown last week, and I think Waikato might try and do that. The one area of concern for Waikato is the way they defend Millsy. Loose forwards out wide.
Yeah.
And we saw Northland tear strips off them last weekend. We saw Otago do some damage against them with that defensive setup the week before.
Yeah.
So they've got some concerns about how they stay connected too wide of the ruck, because Otago will go there go there as often as they can.
Yeah, and connection's key, isn't it? And they've seen, I mean, that Northland try last week where they, you know, the ability to be able to quick tap and go, Otago will do that. They'll bring tempo to the game, they'll get into the fringes, and once you get that and start getting parity over there and really try to work Waikato, I think they'll really try and sort of tire them out. And so that's an area for concern for the Waikato team because when you're looking at Collins and Faddis and Co, they are. I mean, look at this.
Tennis now crawled back under the camera. That was the quickest toilet stop in history. Did you actually make it to a bathroom?
Yeah, I had to run. It's urgent.
Tell you what, it's a hell of a micturation period that you're running there. Do you know what that is? It's you can look up micturation in your own dictionary. It's not a rude word. It's just a medical thing. Milsy, I like the championship final more than the premiership final for one reason.
What's that?
Well, you win the premiership, you're the number one team in the country, and that's fine. You win a trophy, happy days. Yeah. You know, you have a few beers enough, but it's the promotion to the premiership. And I know a lot of people don't get that. They don't really understand why it's such a big deal. I love the fact that in the championship, you either win it all or you're nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, you can be North Harbour, you can get fifth in the premiership, and it's like, all right, well, that's all right. It's an all right season, could have done better. You could be like Wellington or Tasman, made the semis, we're good, we're there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
But in the championship, you either win it all or you're nowhere. You're just in the championship, right?
Yeah.
And Otago's had a couple of cracks at this.
Yeah.
And they are desperate to get one over the line, and they'll be all guns blazing. Waikato, on the other hand, after a pretty tumultuous couple of seasons, they are desperate to be back where they think they belong, which is in the top flight of the competition. It would be a hell of a story either way, a hell of a story for Jono Gibbs, who a year after his brother gets a team promoted to the Premiership, just like Chris did with Wellington last year. And it would be a hell of a story for Benny Herring as well, a young coach who looks at the world very differently to most, getting his team of Otago battlers up back into the top flight of the game. It's been 20 years since Otago have won a title. It's a long time.
Oh, it's fantastic. And that just goes to show how great our coaches are at the moment. Young former players that have come through and are really, you know, stamping their mark on provincial rugby here in New Zealand, which is fantastic.
Finally, on the Short Ball podcast today, Melzy, there's a test match in Japan. On a scale of 1 to 10, we've got to run the post-match on this test. You've got to get excited by Saturday.
Oh, I'll be excited by the post-match, yeah. Absolutely. But I don't know. I'm like, I've not been involved in stuff like this. You know, they talk about dead rubbers and then we've lost one in Hong Kong. And it's no matter what you tell yourself, I think this All Black team, they'll be good. I mean, they'll go out there and they'll win. But it's hard not to get past the fact that you've already won the Bledisloe load, or you know, but you know, the Australians will come hunting. The issue I've got with it is they're like, okay. And I don't even think it's going to be packed. It's supposed to be a 70,000 seated stadium. Well, I think they've only sold 35,000 tickets. So what is that saying? The Japanese, no, they don't like it either.
They might like Japan v All Blacks the week after.
Yeah, true. They probably.
But then what All Black team is playing the week after? I mean, we're in a Harlem Globetrotters situation here with this All Black team. Well, we've got a test match against Australia, which is a dead rubber. Then the following week, we've got a test match against Japan, where half the team's already in London. This is the strangest start to a tour of all time. It's the strangest start to a tour I can remember in my time broadcasting the game. And it, regardless of what your planning is for Rugby World Cup, and I know that message has been sold left, right and centre, well, it's all about the World Cup, it's all about the World Cup, it's all about the World Cup. If it's all about the World Cup, then flag everything else for the 3 years in between and just play the World Cup. Because you've still got to actually maintain the integrity of test match rugby in the interim. Yeah. You know, now we're talking about England rugby, who in 2020 are going to send none of their test match players on a tour of Japan and the Pacific. How are you allowed to do that? In the same week where World Rugby is trying to concoct a League of Nations competition, which we've spoken about on the pod before, which is all about control between the international boards and the clubs, in the same week that they want to do this and say, let's protect the integrity and the sanctity of test match rugby, you've got England already planning to send, a C-string team to the Pacific. You've got an All Black side that's about to play a test and predominantly leave while 19 other All Blacks arrive to play Japan. Either you're the test team or you're not. Yeah. And then, are we going to get to a point where we stop calling these tests and we call them friendlies?
Yeah, because I'm kind of wondering now, you know, after a while now, I've sort of...
You were all guns blazing
about
this. Yeah, I was.
Now that I've,
I know you have.
Now I've soaked it in. I've soaked it in. But the thing is... isn't this really a New Zealand 15? Like we're given these guys an opportunity to go over there. Well, why? I mean, commercially, yeah, I can see All Blacks, but I mean,
that's the problem. How much of the pride you had in the jersey was around the commercial side of it? How many of your 100 tests did you think yourself, I can see the commercial value in this jersey?
I didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not as a player, right?
Nah.
So we've got to put that aside.
Yeah.
And again, we talked about this last week on the pod. This is not about saying to a player you don't deserve a crack at the All Blacks. Mm. But either you make the All Blacks, you can't. This is like, we're booty calling here.
Yeah, true.
Stop the booty calls.
Either
you're talking to me during the day, but not at 3 a.m. when you need something. Going to holler for a Matt Todd.
3:30 p.m. now, mate.
Self-respect. 3:30 p.m. booty call.
Oh, is it 30? Three
what?
O'clock. Is that what time the game is?
No, well, the game's at 3 o'clock Japan.
That's what I'm saying. That's when they need them, isn't it?
Well, I don't know about when you're doing booty calling. You're not
I'm talking about Matt Todd. They need him at 3 o'clock at Yokohama Stadium. So they got the call.
Can we talk about Matt? What is going on with Matt Todd? Hey, mate, what?
Right.
I haven't even been there yet on the short ball today. It's like, no, the rules are very clear.
If you're not playing in New Zealand,
you can't play for the All Blacks. But, oh, shit, Sam Kane's injured. Matt Todd. Hey, I swear, it's like, it's this, mate. It's like you're sitting on the couch, you're going,
What? Did I hear Steve say he was on holiday anyway? Is he on holiday?
Who's on holiday?
He can't be on holiday. He's playing for a club in Japan.
Mate Todd's not on holiday.
Well, that, that's
well, maybe he is.
He said he was on holiday.
Is your mate Beaver back in the country?
He's back. Actually, I've got a, the new Holden Arcadia. Wow. Big launch today.
I hear you're going
big
to a big, launch big Holden launch today.
That's why I got my car washed down at St. Luke's and walked down here. That's why I'm sweating. I've been so busy, man. I've been like, wow, get my car, my Holden Colorado.
Are we going to do this on the short ball right now?
But yeah,
really
Holden Arcadia. Great, great vehicle.
Really?
Looking forward to trying that beast out.
Are we really going through your worry list right now on the podcast?
That's not a worry list. I'm just telling you what I'm looking forward to. I look forward to Ted being on here. Now I'm looking forward to this launch.
Okay, well, finally, are you looking forward to this test on Saturday? You are a little bit, right?
A little bit. Of course, it's the All Blacks, man.
Yeah, and Australia.
Yeah. I'm over Aussie now, mate. I was all for them this year, but I'm over it now.
Why?
Because they haven't really performed.
It's just spirit of generosity. Every dog has his day.
Mate, it was their two test matches. They played against the All Blacks. Now it's like...
Are they a chance?
Yeah, they're
a chance. I know that every word that comes out of Japan at the moment regarding the All Blacks is the word distractions.
Yeah.
Avoiding distractions. You notice that?
Yeah.
It must be the team motto this year, no distractions. Meanwhile, their Instagram is playing up with All Blacks and they're in chariots, they're doing samurai swords, they're eating sushi, they're...
Yakiniku.
They're balls deep in it. Anyway, Saturday night, the All Blacks taking on the Wallabies in the third Bledisloe Cup test, where the Bledisloe Cup will not be up for grabs.
No.
In Japan. Very neutral. That's been the short ball today. Our thanks to Sir Graham Henry and our thanks to producer Tina's bladder. Enjoy your weekend's footy. Enjoy the Mitre 10 Cup finals. Otago taking on Waikato, Auckland taking on Canterbury, and of course the All Blacks taking on the Wallabies.
Ohio. Ohio.